Coming to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Show on the Inside Lacrosse Podcast Network. Featuring Inside Lacrosse and Big Ten Network analyst Mark Dixon, I am your host, Dan Flynn. Before we start, I want to thank you all for your support of this pod and all of our pods at Inside Lacrosse. Keep up the good work. Please share it with a friend if you like what you hear. Also, don't forget to check out Monday's In the Crease podcast with Abern and Devitt, along with Friday's Weekend Preview podcast featuring Quint Kesenick and Terry Foy. Dixie, let's get it. All right, Dix, we're recording this on Monday. Super Bowl was last night. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Yeah, a lot of very happy Eagles fans.
Yeah, man.
Everywhere.
So, you know, I grew up in Delaware. It's basically where I lived was like a suburb of Philly. All of my friends and most of my family are Eagles fans.
Is Delaware part of the tri-state when you say tri-state area?
Yeah. Delaware, Pennsylvania, and Jersey.
Okay. Gotcha. I didn't know if New York was in that mix.
Well, they have their own tri-state.
Gotcha.
I guess that's probably Connecticut, New York, and Jersey.
Connie.
Yeah. But a lot of people I know are really happy. And I remember two things. You know, I thought I was a real Eagles fan, but even with their success this season, I kind of found that I'm really a Ravens fan, and I'm just not as excited as I probably would have been a little while ago. The longer I've lived in Baltimore and followed the Baltimore sports teams, I've realized that I'm less and less a Philadelphia fan.
Sure.
But I still know that feeling when your team wins a championship and how the joy you feel.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people that I care a lot about are feeling that today.
Big time.
Last night, so.
Well, so what was your professional team in Delaware that you had an affinity for growing up?
The Blue Hens.
So the University of Delaware. Yeah, so like professional team.
No, the Phillies, Eagles, Sixers, Flyers. That's who.
So you were a Philly sports fan then growing up?
100%.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so I, the Eagle fans, man, are off the chain. There was something on Barstool Sports. I didn't see it till this morning. I don't know when it was posted, but it was a gaggle of Eagles fans toppling a Toyota Prius. And it said, nowhere in the owner's manual did it say the Prius could withstand an Eagles celebration or something like that. And that was just the tip of the iceberg. But so I've got a lot of Philadelphia Eagle fans. And one story in particular, so last week I keep in touch with Sean Ellenby, the Maryland Sports Information Director for lacrosse, does a great job. And we were chatting last week, and I called him, and then he called me back, and he was like out of breath. And I was like, what's going on? He's like, I'm nervous. Dix, I'm nervous. I'm like, what are you nervous for? He's like, getting on a plane into Minneapolis in a short while. I'm like, no kidding. I go, I forgot. Like, throughout the course of getting to know people, and yeah, that was the thing. You realize, like, these guys are like lifelong Eagles fans, and they've been long-suffering Eagles fans because they've lost two Super Bowls. They lost the Oakland Super Bowl back in the 80s, and they lost was it 1980? And then they lost the Super Bowl to the Patriots. What was that? 10, 12 years ago?
2004.
But what I remembered, they were in the NFC Championship game a lot under Andy Reid.
Three straight years, I think they made it to the.
So it might have been three straight, but it might have been like five out of eight or something like. I don't know. They just seem to always be in the NFC Championship game, and they made it through that one time. But anyway, as we're talking, I was like, "No kidding, man!" I was like, "That's great." And he goes, "He's like, oh my god, this could be life changing. This could be life changing." And to me, I'm trying to fathom, like, what does that mean? What do you mean life changing? But one of the coolest things about it was. He was like, my dad got the tickets. I asked him what it cost. He's like, don't even worry about it. He goes, you don't worry about how much it costs. This is our trip. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah,
so,
cool.
And he's flying high. I shot him a text late last night, and he got back to me, and he's feeling good. And then my wife and I were at an event at Loyola High School on Saturday night, and one of the folks in the alumni office, a guy named Mark Finland. So I was sharing the story with Ellenby with Finland. He's another lifelong Eagle fan, and he was, and I was like, yeah, this guy, one buddy of mine told me this could be life-changing. He goes, absolutely. He goes, this is going to, he's like, you don't understand what we've been eating for the last 25 years, just dirt and disappointment and blah, blah, blah. So I tell you, Philadelphia was alleged to burn or predicted to burn. I haven't seen the
aftermath. Did you see the news coverage of the people on Broad Street? I mean, they had to grease up the poles because of the light posts.
So last week it was grease, and I think it was in the form of Crisco or something of that nature. This week they used hydraulic oil to grease or slick the light poles up on Broad
Street. You know who else is speaking of SID? Ernie LaRossa, speaking of SIDs,
yes.
Who loves the Eagles.
That's true. That is true.
I'm sure he's on cloud nine today.
Yeah. So congratulations to the Eagles. Fly, yeah. Eagles, fly.
Good game, too. I mean, lots of you know, back and forth, lots of points.
It was a fantastic
game. You're waiting for the Patriots to come back, because
they always do. And that's the conversation I've been having over the last 3 or 4 days. Who are you taking? Who are you taking? I'm like, well, I'd like to see the Eagles win. I don't really care. I want a good game.
Yeah. That's what you said last week.
I want a good game. But how about the meme? Of the pass that Brady dropped, and it's this morning. It's a Super Bowl trophy that he misses.
I didn't see that.
So it's him going to the flat and missing a Super Bowl trophy. But it's funny. People were saying like Brady choked, or this guy threw for over 505
yards.
It was ridiculous.
Foles. So going in the game, my feeling was like Foles just needs to not kill the Eagles. Just not be bad.
He was unbelievable.
Excellent.
How about that trick play at the end of the, nice. The second quarter?
Took a lot of guts to call that one.
As a Ravens fan who suffered through the anemic season that was, I can't remember if it was first down they threw it, but I'm like, you got LeGarrette Blount. You're on the second, on the 2 yard line. Like, give it to him. Just go right up the middle. So on fourth down, when they flipped it to, I guess, Chris Clement, I'm like, what is Marty Morningwig now have the Philadelphia? I'm like, you're going to run a sweep on it. But then when he flipped it to the tight end, and then the tight end hit, that was brilliant. Yeah, that was unbelievable.
It was so open.
And it makes you realize just how much the Ravens really are not very good right now.
Yeah.
So hopefully that'll turn around, and you and I could be having a conversation next week about, you know.
So the biggest.
Or next year.
Yeah. The biggest upset of the day was probably Jacksonville Dolphins.
How about that?
Taking down the Navy. Midshipman. Did you see any of that?
Little salve for the Jacksonville Jaguars not being in the Super Bowl. I did not get to see any of the game, but I read about it and got a few texts on it. So
Jacksonville's good. Like they look good. Like their midfielders are athletic. They can get open and create their own shots. One of our interns from last summer, Sean Ewart, is a starting attackman. Mm-hmm. He had a goal yesterday. Big win for him. I exchanged some texts with him after the game.
Mm-hmm.
Great start for their season. They got a tough schedule, so you know who they play next.
They play Duke.
They play Duke next, and then I think they play Marquette. So like they have a tough open to their season.
I think we previewed this game a little bit last week, and the thing that when you look at Jacksonville first, you know, Galloway being the coach, you know that they're going to build, and you know that he's going to attract players. The second thing was, if you look at their schedule last year, they won 3 out of the last 5 games. So they had, and that's akin to me, of a college football team making it to a bowl game with a late run, and then you win your bowl game, and then you have momentum coming into the next season. I think the momentum was huge for Jacksonville. I think it was a little bit of the perfect storm. They get Navy on their home field, which they beat in the mids before in Jacksonville back in 2011, 2012. And Navy didn't have their main faceoff man. And I think Jacksonville ended up winning like 20 out of 23, 21 out of 24. So they had the ball all day long. They wore the Navy defense down. And that big 5-goal run in the second quarter was the difference in the game. But you got to feel good for Jacksonville. But the key here is, and this is the biggest takeaway, this is, you know, Super Bowl Sunday. This was not their Super Bowl. This is their first game of the year. How do you build on it? How do you not become complacent? How do you keep motivated? And I don't think that's going to be a problem, but they've got to come out and execute, as you mentioned, you know, Duke and Marquette on the horizon. But it's like every other, you know, quote-unquote mid-tier team. You use these out-of-conference games to battle test yourself and get ready for the conference play down the stretch.
But it sure was nice to be able to watch lacrosse again
on
TV and enjoy it this weekend. So the season kicked off on Thursday. Vermont got a couple of nice wins
on their
trip south.
Good to see Ian McKay back. Had a big game against Furman, and then they disposed of Mercer. And McKay had a huge weekend. So good to see him back from injury. He's not only one of the best players in the America East, but one of the better players in the game today.
So let's get to a couple of the bigger games of the weekend. We'll start up in Boston, where number 20 BU defeats Providence in overtime 12-11. They came back from a few goals down to tie it up, and John McClain hits a game winner.
Mr. McClain.
Yeah. I want to throw in like a Die Hard reference there about winning in overtime or sudden victory.
It was, I think you could, if McClain, when he bagged the game winner, he could have done the yippee-ki-yay, but that was from Die Hard 2, I believe. I don't think it was from the first one.
No, that's the first one.
Was it the first one?
Yeah,
yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah, when he throws the lighter.
I thought that was when he blew the plane up in the second Die Hard at the end.
You might
of the
be right,
second
or maybe
Die Hard.
He just said it in every one of them.
You got so.
You're right.
As long
I think you're right. He definitely does it when he blows the plane up.
As long as he didn't make a play on Hans Gruber to win the game for Providence. And of course, Die Hard 2, you got to remember the father from Jefferson from Good Times was the leader of the Rogue.
John
Amos.
John Amos.
Yeah. So, but no, all kidding aside, congratulations to McClain and the BU Terriers. Deja vu. Another come-from-behind victory. They beat the Friars last year. I think that game was overtime as well. So to have that happen again. And this is a team that had a watershed year last year for the Terrier program, but lost a lot of those key pieces. The goaltender, Cal Durth, on attack. So to be able to battle back and take that win, really hats off to them. And I will say, I did watch the stream of that game. I watched the last couple of minutes, and there was a young woman, Marissa Njemi, I think, was doing the game. And she did a great job. And a lot of excitement, a lot of energy.
She was very excited.
And emotion. That and that made me – that put a real smile on my face. So hats off to her doing a great job. But hats off to BU with the great way to get their season off on the right foot. And you know, we don't talk a lot about Providence, but I think Chris Gabrielli's put together a nice program up north. John Galloway was his assistant. Left the Rhode Island area, the New England area, to become the leader at Jacksonville. But I think, you know, Gabrielli's got that program on the right course.
Yeah, so McClain ended up with 4 goals. Chris Gray had 2 goals and 3 assists. James Burr had 2 goals and 2 assists, also for BU. For Providence, Sean Leahy, 5 goals to lead the Friars. All right, Dix, moving down south a little bit, Lafayette, a UNC. First time seeing Carolina out there. They get a fairly easy 17-10 win over Lafayette. I was a little surprised by that score. I didn't think Lafayette would put up 10 goals on them.
Well, you got to remember defensively, the Tar Heels graduated a lot from a year ago, in particular Austin Pafani, All-American defender. So they're trying to, you know, the key theme, I think, from the outside looking in with Carolina this year is establishing identity. And replacing a lot of those guys that graduated a year ago that were on that national championship team from 2016. Timmy Kelly, really big day. And it's a good win to get off on the right foot. I mean, not many people knew what Lafayette was going to bring to the table. So, you know, again, you know, Carolina's a team that's going to score. They have the potential to score goals. They were, you know, if you listen to all the reports, they were drubbed at Loyola in their last preseason tune-up the week before by 6 or 7 goals. So to come out at home and get a nice win, get the season off on the right foot, that's good stuff for Carolina.
Yeah, over or down Tobacco Road, number one team in the country, the Duke Blue Devils just pasted Air Force, 18-4.
Yeah, they laid it on them.
Gutterding, 3 goals, 7 assists.
Mm-hmm.
To stake his claim.
Yeah.
For player of the year watch list.
He heard your podcast last week. He's pissed that he's not on the USILA preseason player of the year watch list. But, you know, Gutterding, good or done. 3 goals, 7 assists, 10 points. Brad Smith, 3 goals. Good to see him, you know, pick up where he left off last year. This is a big win for Duke in a variety of ways. One, obviously you want to start off on the right foot. Two, you have your primetime guys leading the way. But three, Air Force has beaten Duke prior to this meeting twice in a row, including a 1-goal game in Durham last year. So, we talked about it a little bit last week. Things at the Air Force Academy very unsettled due to some off-field issues back in the fall. Eric Saramet, their head coach, is still pending reinstatement, I guess is the right word, and Bill Wilson, his assistant, has assumed the interim tag. But Duke did, you know, they did what they needed to do to an Air Force team. It's a little bit in disarray, had beaten them the last 2 years. They shellacked them. 8-3 at half. I mean, you know, 14-3 at the end of three quarters. It was over quick.
Seven different guys or multiple goal scorers.
Love to have that. You love that depth of scoring. You like to have different weapons coming from different angles and that kind of thing. So, yeah, good job. Good job by Duke. Faceoffs, I think, just real quick, a real worrisome thing, and they only went 10 of 26 against Air Force. So that's an area that Duke's really going to have to shore up if they want to make a run at a national title.
Dix, before we get to our biggest game of the weekend, let me tell you about ZipRecruiter.
Please do.
All right, Dix, back to the action. Number 12, Penn State, hosting Villanova, and it was a thriller. Matt Kinnear, our editor-in-chief, was there to witness it. Couldn't see it live.
Yeah, no stream.
No stream available.
It's a challenge because they played in the indoor facility at Penn State. So, one, there might not be the broadcasting capability to have that event in, what's it called, Hulluba? Hulluba Hall?
Hulluba.
Hulluba? Mm-hmm. Is that the correct pronunciation? So, first and foremost, that needs to be taken into consideration. And then secondly, even if you could broadcast from in there, it's such a tight space. The fans are so close; they're right there. There really isn't a good place to put a camera, put a broadcast crew, all the particulars that you need to have a broadcast. So disappointing, but I think it's kind of guilty with explanation as to why that game was not streamed or shown in any way.
So we were talking to Matt before we got started here, and
he's still on cloud nine. hasn't come down yet.
He had a lot to say about this game, for all good reasons. He said that there was some, both goalies got knocked out.
Yeah, you don't see that every day.
Penn State had a 5-goal lead. Mm-hmm. Villanova came back. They win in overtime on a John Clue goal.
Come on, Chris.
Game winner.
Come on, man.
He's only been there for 5-6 years.
Hey, don't even. That guy has been through so much, and he's 5 foot nothing. Quicker than a hiccup. He's tiny. He is tiny.
Did he go to St. Mary's?
He's an Annapolis kid. Yeah. Yeah, he's from St. Mary's High School in the Annapolis area. I mean, hats off to John Clue. I actually officiated him before when they played Georgetown years ago. And just as a referee, you're there to administer rules and interpret and keep players safe and all that good stuff. And he was one of those guys through the years, during my almost 20 years of officiating, that sometimes you almost lose track of what you're doing because you're so enthralled with their athleticism and their capabilities. And he's one of those guys. So it's really good to see him after two major knee injuries back, not only playing well, but playing at an incredibly high level.
Christian Cuccinella, 5 goals for Villanova. Matt couldn't say enough about this kid and his physicality and athletic ability. And also, he delivered what appears to be a pretty big hit.
Yeah, so Matt Barrett, the goaltender for Villanova, the transfer for Virginia, was knocked out of the game. And then Colby Canese, who was actually having a fairly decent day, Cuccinella and him collided, and Matt said that Canese stayed in the game for a few more minutes and then was relieved. But Canese had been struggling health-wise with some flu symptoms that week. So Will Schreiner, who is the backup at Penn State, had been getting reps during the week. So it was almost, you don't know if it's fully because Canese was banged up or injured, as more of maybe it was, Coach Tambroni up at Penn State wanted to get Will Schreiner some reps because he had practiced that week. So we'll see as they move forward.
Other news coming out of this game is that Grant Ament did not play and is in a walking boot and probably will miss about 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, I had heard some rumbles last week about Ament injuring his foot. And some people thought that it was – or a lower leg injury, as it's characterized as, and some people thought it was going to be season-ending. Doesn't look that way. The official word out of Happy Valley is it's day to day. Hopefully it'll be sooner than later because again that's a team that lost a ton of leadership and a ton of scoring with Nick Aponte and their whole Sutton and Florence and Dan Craig at the midfield. So the quicker he can return. But good news for Penn State, you still put up 16 goals minus Grant Amon. Bad news is you give up 17, you lose a 5-goal lead at home, and what's more, playing in that indoor facility. So I'm looking at the box score right now. It says weather, 70 and sunny. I don't know about the sunny part, but it was indoors, and when you have that advantage, because that's where you practice. And, I mean, obviously when a team travels and you play on the outdoor facility, it's a little bit more of an equal playing field. But when you have the ability to practice at that indoor facility and you're coming in as a visitor for maybe a shoot around, if not the day before, then day of, probably day before, but still, like, that's a lot to get used to. So to lose that lead at home and then ultimately to lose a game, that's quite disappointing for the Lions.
I think it's the first time Penn State's ever lost a game in there.
It might be. I know Ohio State's never lost a game in the Woody Hayes.
Both of them have never, until now. So in Friday's weekend preview podcast, Terry Foy interviewed Jeff Tamboroni and tried to get him like on the record saying if that's an advantage playing in there, and he was very he danced around saying that, more saying that they just have really good facilities and that they are usually really good at home no matter what.
Yeah, I agree with that. But again, when you have the ability to practice in there, get used to the visibility, get used to the surface, get used to all the noise. You know, the noise is something that's definitely a factor. In my opinion, that is a decided home field advantage, and it's only one game. You know, you lose, and we talked about it last week. You know, Villanova is one of those teams that could be really, really underrated, and doesn't get any easier for the Wildcats. They take on Yale in their next game, I believe. So that's coming up pretty quick.
Dix, a couple other games. Just want to get your thoughts on them. We'll do some drive-bys on Rutgers is in action. They win. Number 8 Rutgers wins 11-7 over Robert Morris. And another game, Ohio State 13, Cleveland State 6. So first time out for a couple Big Ten teams.
Yeah, so workmanlike effort by Rutgers kind of fits their personality. Ground that win out against Robert Morris, who's no slouch. And Robert Morris, you got to give the Colonials a lot of credit. They play a very aggressive schedule. They've got Penn State on their docket a little bit later in the season. Actually, maybe it might be next week. I'm not looking ahead, but, you know, that's a nice win for Rutgers, especially coming off of the news and the loss of Adam Charlambidis for the second season in a row. And then Ohio State beating Cleveland State, I think that's a really neat rivalry that's brewing for the Battle of Ohio. And John Kelly, 4 goals for the Buckeyes. We asked where the midfield scoring was going to come from, and John Kelly gave it that. Interesting thing on Kelly, he's always been sort of like a second-line midfielder since he's been in Columbus. But last year in the first round of the NCAA tournament, Ryan Tarasenko, their incredible short-stick defensive midfielder, was injured, and then they needed somebody to take his spot, and John Kelly was that guy who played in the quarterfinals throughout, you know, the next 3 games, quarterfinals, semifinals, and the national championship game in that short-stick D-mid position. So, you know, good to see him have a good game offensively, back in a more natural role for him to start the Buckeye season out.
Dix, let me tell you about one of our sponsors, Trimino. Trimino protein-infused water has 7 grams of whey protein and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. No sugars, no carbs, and only 28 calories. Trimino is ideal before, during, or after your workout, and it tastes great. Comes in 7 delicious flavors, including 3 new flavors: citrus, orchard, and raspberry limeade.
I like raspberry limeade.
Yeah,
that's a very unique combination.
Yeah, and orchard.
Orchard's probably apple, right?
Yeah, but clever title.
Yeah, I like that. Is it angry?
It increases energy and endurance, and even curbs your appetite, so you can play hard, not hungry. Protein has never tasted so good.
Are you going to get some samples?
Yeah, I'm going to try and get some.
I would try it. I would absolutely
try it.
Yeah,
I heard it's fantastic.
Yeah, sounds good.
So, hey, there's no new IL Maverick media poll this week.
Yeah, it was weird.
So we had a preseason one. Not enough teams
played.
Yeah,
I get that.
So the reason for not putting one out is because not enough teams played to really maybe move things around. But I'll throw the question to you. Did anything you see this weekend change maybe like your top 10?
No, it didn't. My group stays the same. I tell you, I put Rutgers at 5, which is a little higher than a lot of folks. But what I really liked out of Rutgers, I know we just talked about it, but Christian Trazzolini, he's one of those guys coming back from injury. him and Charlin Bedis missed last year. Trazzolini, 3 goals. So I like what I saw out of Rutgers on both ends of the field. But no, I don't see any change. Maybe Penn State was too high. I think I had them at 8 or 9. Maybe they're too high. But that ranking was made with Ament in the lineup.
Yeah, sure.
And Ament obviously was not there, and they lose by 1 goal to Villanova. So, I'm not. Yeah, it's 1 week. It's the first real, you know, first weekend of competition, a healthy slate of games, and the season obviously kicks off in much more earnest this week.
Dix, we have a new feature in the podcast this year. I'm very excited about it. I know you are too. Listeners can call in and leave a voicemail for us, like on, you know, like the Stern Show or something. And we'll take your question. We'll play it during our podcast, and then we'll answer it. So here's the number for listeners to call in: 443-595-7020. I'll give that one more time: 443-595-7020. 443-595-7020. So call in, leave us a message, ask us a question, make a point. We'll include it in the podcast. So Dix, we got a new season, and it's time for you to give us and all of our listeners a primer or a refresher course on what are some of the
points of emphasis. Did you go to Hopkins? Did you really go to Hopkins? I know I saw you on campus.
I was a science major.
I know I saw you on campus a few times.
What are the points of emphasis for officials in 2018?
So, no rule changes in 2018. As everybody knows, rules go in two-year cycles. Last year was the first year of a two-year cycle, so there are no rule changes this year. But you always have the points of emphasis. Player safety, first and foremost, high hits, anything to the head and neck area, helmet to helmet, those kinds of things, point of emphasis. Face-offs, trying to keep that as clean as possible, looking. The big things in 2018 that were featured on the rules video, players using their hands to grab their opponent's stick. There's also a move where if you lose the clamp, face-off men will come up through the elbow and shoulder area underneath of that those hyperextended arms, or extended arms, I should say, and they do a rip technique. So they rip the elbow back or they rip the shoulder back, and that's something that's been we've been charged with making sure that that does not happen as to the best of our ability. And also using the head. So in other words, when the whistle blows, some guys will lead with their head and try to gain advantage over the ball and get a clamp and play it out in the space. So those are some of the things we're looking at on the face-offs in terms of points of emphasis. Bench decorum is always a point of emphasis. Anytime you hear an F-bomb, you're supposed to throw a flag. But more, and I think coaches have done a good job of cleaning that up, moreover is coaches being on the field. And if you watch the 2018 rules video, that you'll see coaches, even if they're on the field by like 3 feet, they're still on the field. And if that, you know, how quickly the game can change if the ball goes the other direction and the officials or another player is heading up that side of the field and you make contact, I mean, that's, you know, you're talking at least a 1 minute foul. You might even, you know, coach might even get ejected under those circumstances. So, Those are really the big points of emphasis. Obviously, it's going to be a very interesting August meeting when the Rules Committee reconvenes, because the two things I think that are first and foremost in everybody's mind, first, shot clock. Are we just going to go to a hard shot clock, whether it's 30 seconds, 45 seconds, 60 seconds, 90 seconds, whatever the case may be. What I can tell you coming out of the coaches' meetings at the end of last year, no one can agree on what the shot clock should look like.
Do you have a preference, like what you would want to see?
I've said it all along. I like save is made, team has 20 seconds to clear, 60 seconds to shoot, meaning they get 20 seconds to cross the midfield line, and then they get 60 seconds to shoot.
So 80 seconds.
In essence, I guess maybe like an 80-second shot clock. I don't know. I really don't give it a whole lot of thought. The way I look at it is it's not going to speed the game up. If that's the intent of this is my personal opinion of people want the game to be faster. It's not going to speed the game up. I think you're going to see potentially more zone defense if there is a hard and true shot clock. Coaches are going to coach to try to maximize and slow things down as much as they can and take advantage of the shot clock. I don't know. There's just a myriad of issues. You know, sometimes as an official, do I wish there was a shot clock? Yeah, because, you know, it's on us. It's a subjective kind of preference or you know, I've always said it's when I'm broadcasting a game or officiating a game or just watching a game, there's a feel. Like you can feel it when a team is not attacking the goal the way that they were in the beginning of a contest or throughout a contest or, you know. So anyway, that's just me, my personal opinion. No one else's. But those are, you know, the shot clock will be a huge talking point at the rules committee meeting. Then the dive. A lot of people want to see the dive come back. That is a very, very difficult play to officiate around the crease with the speed and the size and, you know, the quickness of which those plays happen, the bang bang nature. So we'll see. We'll see what goes down.
So shot clock, though, as an official, I understand what you're saying because now it's subjective. You have to determine when to put on a stall warning. But right. How?
It's not a stall warning. It's a shot clock.
A shot clock. But my question is, would you have to have the clock is now kind of in the corner where it'd be like, would it have to be moved? So you can see, so everyone can see it better.
I think that most places, at least at the Division I level, it's in a place that's very visible. You know, so when a shot clock is put on under the current rules, it's very, very visible. And schools have done a really nice job as well of getting shot clock operators that know what they're doing. So I don't see that as an issue, a location of the shot clock. I mean, if you look at the current setup of programs, the shot clock's already in a pretty. I don't see it having to move. No.
All right, let's move on to some big games this week. It feels more like last week was sort of like an appetizer.
Yeah, there you go.
And now we're moving into like a main meal. So first big game, Navy at Maryland.
Yeah.
First game for the Terps. Maryland Navy coming off of a disappointing
shellacking
road loss where they were dominated in parts of the game.
Yeah, sure.
Who do you like in this one? What do you think Navy needs to do to try to slow down Maryland?
Yeah, it'll be the Terps' first time out. Unofficial reports have them playing a very close game against Georgetown a couple weeks ago, and then talking with people that saw Maryland play Virginia in a scrimmage this past weekend say the Wahoos got the better of that game. Don't put any stock in the scrimmage results. They are what they are. They're dry runs, they're dress rehearsals, those kind of things. But I feel it's worth mentioning when you have the reigning national champion, Maryland, getting their first game action of the season. Navy's going to have to try to win faceoffs. They're going to have to try to get possession because Maryland will just pick you apart. And even though they have a new cast of characters, they're still pretty darn good. So Navy, first and foremost, has to try to win some possession time. They've got to play much better team defense than they played against Jacksonville because Maryland will possess the ball and be very, very smart with it and will pick you apart. So those are a couple of things that you got to look for on the Navy side. Maryland, you know, obviously new cast of characters coming out, but, you know, when you talk about Jared Bernhardt, he's moving from midfield to attack. I mean, people are just really excited about the sophomore and his you know, what he possesses now and then, of course, his upside. Connor Kelly returns. He's my favorite for the Tuaritan. I think he's the best player in college lacrosse right now.
Is he the best Connor in college lacrosse?
Connor Kelly, Connor Fields. Yeah. So, I'm a midfielder. I'm biased, you know. So I like middies. Connor Fields, Ben Reeves, Pat Spencer.
Justin Gutterding.
Justin Gutterding. Yeah. Jeff Teat, Michael Sowers. God, who else? I'm sure we're missing somebody in that mix. Trey LeClaire from Ohio State. Just a plethora of attackmen. But I like Connor Kelly. He's such a good shooter. And I think Maryland offensively could be a little bit more athletic, which is hard to imagine, but they could be a little bit more athletic than they were last year.
Yeah. Down the road, Virginia opens up. You mentioned their scrimmage against Maryland. They host the Loyola Greyhounds in what could be a really good game.
Always a great game. And if you think back to, maybe was it 3, 4, maybe 5 years ago when Loyola played Virginia? I think it was Virginia won the game on a buzzer beater, a very controversial buzzer beater. Yeah. That led to the rule change. The old rule was the ball had to be across the goal line before the clock hit zero. That prompted the rule change to now it just has to be out of the offensive player's stick.
That makes more sense to me.
It does. It's like basketball. Yeah. But then you throw in, okay, so if you shoot it and it ricochets off of an offensive player and goes in, it's no goal. But if you shoot it and it ricochets off of a defensive player and goes in,
what difference does it make?
Goal. I don't make the rules. I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe it's viewed as, I don't know, you get an extra touch or something like that. I really don't know. But that's, you know, that's the rule. So this will be a really good game. I think it'll be a really good game. It was a great game last year at Ridley. These two teams are very physical when they play each other. Both are athletic. How is Virginia going to defend Pat Spencer, who is just on another level? And how is Loyola going to handle the athleticism of the Virginia midfield? I think it's going to be a really, really fun game.
Up north, UMass travels to Army West Point to play the Black Knights.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people were excited to see what Army has to offer this year. When you look around, most of the folks have them just outside the top 10 in the preseason. They are seen as the main challengers to Loyola in the Patriot League. So I think really exciting to get to see Army. UMass made it to the Colonial Championship game last year, if I'm not mistaken.
They upset Hofstra.
They beat Hofstra on a buzzer beater, on a shot from midfield, I think it was, that was just misread by the Hofstra netminder. So it'll be interesting to see what UMass has to offer. Always a good up-north battle to begin the season. So it's going to be...
I picture a real physical game.
And you know, look, it's something that I tweeted about over the weekend. You know, we're talking, you know, first week of February, and the level at which these guys are playing and the intensity that they're bringing and the execution that's there, and obviously it's going to get better. It just really speaks to the preparation of these players and how there is no off season anymore. Every now and again, go have a beer if you're of age, and you know, and hopefully some of the Philly, you know, kids enjoyed a cheesesteak last night or something like that. But by and large, the way these kids work, it's phenomenal.
Dix, another game featuring a local team getting the action for the first time. Richmond travels to UMBC to play the Retrievers, second year for
Ryan Moran,
at
UMBC. Yeah, so Retrievers much improved last year in the America East. I think they're ranked fourth preseason in the AE, and they could be better than that. Young team, I think they're going to face off better. They got some question marks in the goal. They graduated Rustin Souter, who had a real nice year a season ago. So they'll be ready to play a Richmond team that is favored in the SoCon, and will maybe change their identity. I mean, that's a All-American goaltender Benny Pugh is gone. All-American defender Brendan Hines was a tremendous player for them over the last 4 years. He's gone. So maybe the identity shifts from a defensive-minded team to more of an offensive, you know, with more scoring punch. But that'll be a real nice game.
Boston U, coming off a big win, they travel to Columbus to take on the Buckeyes.
Yeah. That'll be probably in Woody Hayes Athletic Center, where the Buckeyes have never, ever lost. So BU will have their work cut out for them. But I think that's a good early-season test for Ohio State to get a team that's right on the doorstep, knocking on the door of trying to get into the NCAAs, will challenge in the Patriot League as they did last year. But God, how does BU stop Trey LeClaire? Like that guy's a monster and has a tremendous velocity on his shot and moves so well for such a big guy. I see him having a big day in this one.
In the final game, I want your opinion on, Dix, Towson Tigers at Johns Hopkins Blue Jays Saturday night, 6 o'clock. ESPNU.
Yeah, big opener for both ball clubs. Towson beat Hopkins last year. I think they've won two out of the last three matchups. You know, Sean Nadelin returns the defense and a great faceoff, man. That defense, you know, up the middle there, just so strong. Question marks offensively on who's going to put the ball in the back of the net. They're going to rely on a number of transfers, one of which from Richmond, Jean-Luc. Seems like he looks pretty good. Great reports on him offensively throughout the preseason. Then you got a Johns Hopkins team. It's looking, you know, they've taken a kinder, gentler approach, trying to keep their guys fresh come, you know, the later on in the season. But this is a game the Blue Jays, I'm sure they really, really want. They would love to get back on the right track in terms of, you know, they've seen Loyola go to the championship weekend in 2016. Towson goes to championship weekend in 2017. Maryland has now won a national title. I think Johns Hopkins, that doesn't sit well at Homewood. So I think this is a Johns Hopkins team that's going to be much better defensively, I believe, with Patrick Foley back after missing last year. They're strong at the faceoff dot with Hunter Moreland, and they've got an attack that can score and wear you down and run some really efficient plays. It'll be a real good game to kick off the year for Hopkins and Towson.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to watching that game on Saturday. Dix, after a real long one last week, putting in a tidy short pod.
You say what you have to say, and you move on with your life.
I totally agree.
But what about, we haven't done a give and go. We doing give and go? About favorite Super Bowls? How about that? Give them something.
The Ravens winning the Super Bowl twice.
Okay, thank you.
And last night.
Okay. That's it. Yeah. That's quick and dirty, just like that.
So, Dix, let's quickly do a give and go. I'll ask you a question. I'll give you a second to think about it. Mm-hmm. Then I'll give my opinion, then I'll get yours. That's how this works. So let's talk about Super Bowl commercials from last night. I have two. I like the first one that I liked was, did you experience like a 20-second screen just went blank?
Yeah, yeah.
And then like the local WBL came up.
Yeah, and then it came up, and then they came right, and then Al Michaels had to come out of break.
That was a very expensive.
I was going to say, somebody's pissed. They lost $3 million right there.
And my buddies who were watching in Philly, like, they had the same experience. So mm-hmm. it was a national thing, not a local thing. I thought that was pretty interesting, and that was a very expensive screw-up.
Yep.
The other one I liked was the Budweiser commercial, that not the Dilly Dilly ones, with the Bud Knight.
I thought that sucked. I think I could take the Bud Knight. Like, you if there's going to have a Bud Knight, you want somebody that's like, you know, complete, you know, just...
You get the guy from, like, Game of Thrones, like the Hound or something. Some giant man, or, you know.
See, I don't watch Game of Thrones, so. You get John McClane. You get John McClane as the Bud Knight.
That would be cool.
Because no matter what, he's going to tear you up. Jason Bourne. Jason Bourne is the Bud Knight. Like, he looks like innocent, yeah, and just like can kill you with his thumb. John Clue. There you go.
So the Budweiser commercial where they took their regular bottling canning process and put water in it, mm-hmm, to send it to hurricane victims.
Oh, that was cool.
It was nice, but it was like a minute long, probably like an $8 million commercial to, mm-hmm, pat themselves on the back for helping people out and doing community service and good deeds. It just seemed kind of
little self-fulfilling,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Exactly.
It's like, it reminds me of the critic. So you proud of something you supposed to do, or yeah, exactly. what was that yeah, bit back in, yeah, the day? Yeah, you're supposed to do that.
But I thought it was a good ad. I liked it. Definitely told the story, and I didn't know that they were doing that. So I guess that's why they wanted like their own little PR. Mm-hmm. They paid for their own public relations.
Yeah,
how about,
sure,
you? Which ones did you like?
So there's a couple things with the Super Bowl commercials. One, some steam gets taken out of it because you can see them before the Super Bowl is played. And along those lines, and I thought it was great watching it a second time, was the Doritos Sprite commercial. The Doritos commercial with Peter Dinklage.
Oh, yeah.
And he was doing the Busta Rhymes.
The Game of Thrones guy.
And then, but I know Peter, I've never watched Game of Thrones. I know Peter Dinklage more from Elf.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you feeling tough today, my friend. You're an angry elf. And then he drop kicks Will Ferrell running down the table. So Miles, what was his name? Miles Standish. What was his name? He was like the children's writer. I forget. Anyway,
I was hosting people at my house, and I would get up a lot during the commercials too.
Yeah.
So I don't remember them as well as, like, I remember seeing that one though, because someone was like, "Hey, it's Tyrion Lannister from Game of Thrones."
Well, I didn't when they did a review today of like best and worst or whatever. There were some that I was like, oh, I missed that one. I missed that one. I missed that one. But yeah, so Dinklage doing Busta Rhymes with the Doritos, and then Morgan Freeman, Missy Elliott was really good.
Morgan Freeman too.
And they look like, I think one of the things I liked most about the commercials, they both looked like they had fun doing it. Now, I know it's recorded and they're paid probably tons of dough to do it, but they both looked like they had fun doing it. So that was cool. I love the avocado commercial where I guess they started a colony or a community inside of a bubble. And they started freaking out when they realized they left the chips outside of the bubble. And so anarchy was about to ensue, but then they got calmed down for a moment because of something. But then some dude goes, the Wi-Fi's not working. And then it was like mayhem after that. So I thought that was pretty funny. But what stole the show for me was Eli Manning and Odell Beckham, the Dirty Dancing thing. I thought that was a riot. I know some people didn't like
it. That was an ad for the NFL, right?
Yeah, I think it was, actually. I don't know what it was an ad for, but I just thought it was hysterical.
They showed Eli got more screen time than like Nick Foles, you know?
Well, it's like, I guess the joke is like Eli, once again, is the MVP when the Patriots are playing.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, that was funny. That was funny. And you take I guess you take Eli's like persona. He's always kind of pouty and, you know, never looks happy. And then, of course, the season that he had where he was benched and led to the firing of Bob McAdoo and all that good stuff, to see him like do that commercial.
Bob McAdoo. I'm pretty sure it was Ben McAdoo.
Oh, was it Ben McAdoo?
Bob McAdoo's the old basketball player.
See what I know about that. But Ben McAdoo.
Yeah.
I like how that guy went from looking like, like a seventh grade science teacher, to the slick back hair and the shades and stuff, and all of a sudden he's looking like, you know, he's in waste management.
That guy was in way over his head.
It seemed that way. Yeah. It seemed that way. But yeah, so those were the three commercials that stood out to me. But again, like, you can see them ahead of time, which takes a little wind out of your sails. And then the other thing is, like, they're very safe. There's not a whole lot of, what's the word I could use, provocative commercials anymore.
Yeah, it seems like there's also, like, that advertising strategy, I guess you'd call it, where you don't know what the product is.
Right.
You watch the commercial for, you know, it's a minute long, and you watch it for 55 seconds, and then they put their name, like their logo up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had no idea what that was for.
That was the Keanu Reeves commercial where he's standing on top of the motorcycle.
Yeah, that was one of them.
And my friend who was over at that, it was like, oh, this must be a commercial for the new Harley that's coming out. It wasn't. It was for some, I don't even know what it was.
Yeah, that was not money well spent.
No.
If we don't even remember it the next day.
No. I mean, he could have been like, you know, John Wick or something like that, but no, it was. I don't know what the deal was.
Anyway, that's our give and go, and that's our show for today. Enjoy the games this week, and we'll have a lot to talk about next week. We'll see you then.